Hang on a second, Flashketeers. This is part two of a two-part episode. So if you'd like the full experience, I recommend going back and listening to the previous installment. Then, once you're all caught up, you can relax, tune in, and enjoy this second half of our Brian Clevenger guest episode. So we are going to be finishing off with, specifically, Brian, a blast from your past, as, with permission, we are going to be looking at the third installment of TLF's Flash adaptation of 8-Bit Theater.
I've got so much money. More money than I know what to do with, in fact. If I had a nickel for every dime I have, I'd still be rolling in cash.
Shut it, Geezer. Can't you see I'm trying to think over here?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that I'm so happy to have reason to come into such a large amount of money. It really is a great story, you know, how I came across all this gold, I mean.
Leave me alone, you crazy old man. Can't you see I'm busy looking for an old man who recently came into a boatload of money?
What? Why are you looking at me like that? Oh, I'm little old man here.
That was, 8-Bit Theater 3. That was a powerful blast from the past of June 2003. Brian, do you need a moment? Are you okay?
I'm alright. I'm okay.
Okay. So, how was that? When's the last time you went back to watch these old cartoons?
Oh, probably 2003.
Yeah.
Which sounds really dismissive, but honestly, I just was never that big into Flash stuff, or, you know, and there were a lot of people who would email me saying, "Oh, I'm so excited! We want to, you know, adapt your comics into a Flash series," and this happened somewhat frequently, and what would happen every time is that they would do a few, realize, "Holy shit, this is so much more work than I imagined," and it would just peter out, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wasn't like. I hate to say, it's not that I wasn't excited, because, like, you know, it's cool that people wanted to do that, but I kind of knew every time I got one of these emails, I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be the same thing again. You'll do a few, you'll realize it's a lot of work, and, you know, you'll want to put that kind of energy and time towards something of your own. You know, that's cool. Or just, you know, this isn't for me after all. Whatever. So I would just blanket, you know, anyone who asked me for permission, I was like, yeah, go nuts, you know, have fun with it, whatever. And they all just kind of blurred together after a while, you know, I mean, this went on for years and years and years. But I do remember this one. I remember it from the opening. I thought that was really clever, the opening loading screen thing. I'd forgotten that this was the one that I contributed a couple of lines of spoken dialogue to at the very end.
I was gonna say, is that you? It is.
It is. It's just an amazing impersonation.
All right.
that is 2003 era Brian making a cameo in the credits and selling cookware.
Yeah, as I was trying to, because I remember, I forget if I had the context for, or if I just had the lines that I needed to speak. Either way, I don't remember. So now it's kind of confusing about why this cookware. But while watching it, I remember. I think I was making fun of. It was a commercial that they would show, like, you know, a million times a day, and it was the, you know, they're trying to sell some. I think you were supposed to. It was like the colander was the pot lid, right? So you could just kind of tip the pot over, and you would automatically drain the water.
Oh, those.
Right, but it would show, you know, oh, this is so much better than, and then they do a flashback to the idiot, stupid way of using an actual colander, which was in black and white, and they would always. It was like the direction that they gave these actors was. Use this as if you're an alien. You don't know what the power of gravity is on this alien world that you're on, and you've never seen water, and you don't know what a sink is for. Like, it was just, you would use this thing, you know, they would always stumble and drop it in the dumbest way possible. And I think I remember, because I'm even now kind of agitated about it, I must have written, like, a blog post just, you know, lampooning this. It was like a series of commercials. It was more than one.
Oh yeah, I mean, like object. as a genre, like that. Oh, right. There's got to be a better way.
Yeah, is that?
Like, do you keep setting your house on fire while combing your hair? There's got to be a better way. But
how? If only we could invent a way to comb your hair without a flamethrower.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, I guess we're kind of doing this backwards, but like the credits bloopers are delightful.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that was genius.
Yeah, and like using Fighter as the goofus versus Black Mage as the gallant in the infomercial is great. I really like you probably heard me just like guffaw at like how good the voice actor for Fighter's scream is at the end.
It's very good.
Yeah.
It's like that is definitely an I have poured boiling water on myself scream.
Yeah.
The method school. He might have actually done it.
Yeah, I mean, like method
maybe,
acting. You know.
Yeah.
I hate to like, I don't know, neg it in any way, but I do wish the sound quality was better.
No, yeah, we say this about like every single like thing that we cover is that the sound mixing is terrible. But it was 2003.
Yeah, imagine like hardware has got to be a big part of that.
Yeah, good quality. Microphones were not a thing.
Yeah, I mean, even past Brian's microphone is not 100%.
Yeah, that's true.
Although this is still, I had forgotten about this, but like the Black Mage's voice acting is still has, I think, the perfect. My character is meant to yell, but my mum is next door, and I don't want her to hear what I'm doing.
Yeah,
yeah. So instead, they kind of yell like this.
Yeah,
and it's very sweet. Like this whole thing, as with the previous adaptations we covered, like it's clear that this is coming from a place of like real like desire to make a big fan gesture, right?
Yeah, no, just full of affection for the source material.
Oh, absolutely, yeah,
and yeah,
and the script is pretty good, as well, which helps.
Okay.
But I think this improves on the previous two installments in that, like, partially by this point in the comic, like in the early days of the comic, like your own voice is starting to come together in terms of like the jokes and the timing and like the characters' personalities are getting a bit more well established. But also, go ahead.
Just, you know, again, because I'm kind of going over the scripts of these comics, you know, with 20 years of hindsight now. That's like my main daily project until I get it done. And I was amazed, actually, by, because I really, you know, I don't sit around rereading Ape at Theater, believe it or not. So, especially for these early comics, I had not seen them in 15 years, you know, maybe even longer. And I was really amazed by how quickly... it's all established. The tone of voice, the type of comedy, the rules of, you know, what we're allowed to do and when and why. It all comes together in like the first 20 or so pages. It's very quick.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, and even here, this is a very early comic. I forget which stretch of pages it is exactly. But even here we have the indications, because I there were still early on, there were a lot more direct Simpsons references. Because this was back when I didn't know that anyone else was ever going to read it.
Mm.
Ah, yeah, there are definitely some Simpsons zings, especially with the old men. Although the old men sequence is delightful.
I mean, hearing old men say that was the style at the time just kind of seems like a natural thing.
I mean, it's net. Yeah, they all do it. They can't help it.
Yeah, I do that deliberately to irritate anyone under 18 I'm in a conversation with.
Which was the style at the time.
That was the style at the time. Back in my day, we tied our own shoes. That was the style at the time. But yeah, but I think you can also feel the animator themselves like flexing a bit more and like doing a bit more with like some of the...
Yeah, Cloud specifically was actually really well puppeteered.
Yeah, so I don't know if that was actually... I mean, I know that the asset must have been borrowed from the Joseph Blanchett Legendary Frog Final Fantasy Chocobo Robo voice flash, which we covered before, because it reuses some of the Cloud animations from that. But like also like they have a lot of fun with like some of the flash effects and like the shiny gradients and all that kind of thing.
Yeah,
which is great, and yeah, like the joke that it's this big long elaborate summon and then just like a little bird appears. It's just a chocobo over there. That's about it. That's great. And there are, you know, little cameos from other video game things. Like, I think, like, either Bub or Bob from Bubble Bobble is in the queue to try out to be a Warrior of Light. And, yeah, it's sweet. It's fun. And you do get a, like, I remember, like, this being where I realized, okay, Fighter isn't just, like, dumb as a box of hammers, but, like, he is also, like, genuinely a nice guy.
Yeah.
And like, excited to go on an adventure in, like, a really endearing way. Which sets him up as, like, the perfect foil to the Black Mage's sort of, like, miserable, violent nihilism.
Yeah, one thing, again, you know, revisiting these comics after so long, I think that what really made... I think somewhere in the commentary, what I type out is something to the degree that the engine that makes Ape Theater run for, you know, 1,200 pages is the fact that every character is the stupidest character.
Oh, yes.
But just in their own specific way. Like, Black Mage is incredibly dumb, but especially here early on, because there's not that many characters from him to bounce off. He's the smart one, but he constantly is doing saying stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
But then Fighter is even dumber, but then that just sets up Black Mage to do or say something even dumber. It's just, it was a lot of fun to play around with that kind of dynamic where nobody's really right.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah, and like a lot of, like, even major plot points, from what I remember, kind of are generated from just bad ideas generating worse ideas.
Oh, yeah, it's just, yeah, absolutely, that's always what happens.
Which is pretty close to, like, a lot of tabletop campaigns I've been involved in over the years.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Alex, tell us about your experience with this.
No, I watched all of these. I watched all of these back in the day, and also read, I want to say a good, like, 30 maybe more pages of it when I was a teen, I've always really liked it, and it's always nice to go back to something and see that, like, the comedy, like, of it all, like, still holds up. It's still funny. The jokes still land.
It's interesting because, like, but by this point, like, these are the kind of, you know, similar to when we were talking about Looking for Group, like, these are the kind of jokes which now are kind of old hat, but at the time it was like, wow, no one has ever made this observation before, that, like, the NPCs, they just say the same thing over and over. That's dynamite. It's hilarious. It's great.
Yeah, but what I loved about living through having made it was that, okay, so again, there's 1,224 pages, and so I was updating this comic for, like, essentially a decade. And so it lasted long enough that there were several waves of, oh, this thing is genius, oh, this thing is terrible, oh, secretly it was always good, oh, secretly it was always bad, oh, secretly only the first half is good, oh, actually it sucks now. You know, there were all these backlashes, and then backlashes to the backlashes, and it was just amazing to watch that happen in real time. But the one that kept coming up was, oh, it was only the first ones, only the early ones are funny. And I just always thought, you're out of your mind. the first ones are, you know, they're the easy jokes, right? They're the, oh, it's, if you ever notice, oh, the peanuts on an airplane, oh, they're bad and they're small. You know, it's that kind of level of comedy.
It's just like,
right. It's just immediate observation of these shared experiences, or just playing around with the rules that we know exist in a video game but seem odd in this context in the comic or whatever. We're just calling attention to them. It's not, you know, it's not redefining anything. It's not super interesting. Mm. The second half of the Ape Theater archive is just weird. It's so strange. Like, it has enough momentum in the comic itself that then the comic starts to make fun of its own rules.
Oh,
it starts to play around with everything that not only does it play around with what you're supposed to expect out of games and traditional stories, it's also playing with your expectations of this specific story based on everything it's already done. Like, it's much more interesting to me anyway. And what I've found rejuvenating in a way is that in the years since, anytime I see somebody quoting Ape at Theater, it's always a gag from that second half. And I'm like, ah, vindicated. I told you.
I think the reason for people probably saying, like, oh, only the first, like, section is good, is it's probably people's incredibly, like, rose-tinted nostalgia glasses coming into play.
And,
like,
And certainly, there's some psychology to it as well. Like when you, to have discovered Ape Theater, this weird sprite comic thing, you know, you probably in 2003 or 4 or whatever, probably hadn't seen a sprite comic.
Yeah.
And it hadn't seen one with this kind of, just this very strange sense of humor to it. So the sense of discovery around it kind of granted it a stronger feeling than, you know, you'll never recapture that sense of discovery, that sense of awe.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just, you know, that you've grown, you've seen more things, you've experienced more things, and it's just harder to impress. So yeah, if you compare just the workmanship of the later ones, the craftsmanship, you know, it's a better product, but it's never going to recapture that spirit of discovery, that feeling, that nostalgia that you have for the very first stuff.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Although if I may put my fanboy hat on for a bit, my favorite gag from, I did end up reading the entire run,
good.
Which was,
Brian,
an experience.
That's the bare minimum. That's the bare minimum research you two should have done, by the way.
And like, yeah, it goes some places, but I don't remember exactly where it is in the run. I think it's maybe the first third or something. But the payoff, the first payoff with the Armoire of Invincibility coming back.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just got to that in the script that I'm doing. Yeah,
and the fact that it has its own theme tune, flying through space, having adventures, like when I was like 14, like I would sing that at my friends to describe how good the comic was. Yeah, but no, there's an awful lot there's an awful lot of good writing here, and like to bring it back to drag it back towards the animation we just watched. Like I think that even though the microphone quality and the sound mixing are not great, and like the voice actors like. They definitely understand the characters, and they understand how the lines are meant to be delivered. And I think, for the most part, it really works.
Yeah, I'll say if there's any weakness to the voice acting, obviously the microphones don't help. But you know, what can you do? I would say that it's just that they should have done a little more to change the script, because the script is really written to be read and not to be spoken, and so there's some unnatural cadences that come in. Nothing that they could have done to change that by just reading the script. Like, and I understand why they did it. They wanted to be, you know, authentic to the original source material. So I'm not really, you know, it's not like a criticism exactly, but I feel like it would have been improved had they done a couple read-throughs, just tweaked, you know, a couple words on every line is probably all it would have taken. And it would have just read a little more naturally.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
It's really interesting to you say, like, you would have preferred them to, like, kind of try to make it more their own.
Because every medium is different, right? Like, I never, when I was writing these comics, it never occurred to me that they'd ever be, that any of this dialogue would be spoken. So much of the dialogue, you know, Ape Theater had a reputation for being wordy, you know, these huge word bubbles. But, man, I'm just trying to fill the page. Like, these characters can't emote action. Like, that's why it's like that. So yeah, you know, when it comes to an actual spoken word, you know, cut some stuff.
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. Yeah, so I think that's gonna let us transition to. I'm afraid we don't really have any Flash R beyond the insight that you've given us here, Brian, because so we covered episodes 1 and 2 of this adaptation way back in episode 27. A while ago now. But the creator, TLF, is basically a ghost. They only ever made these 5 installments on Newgrounds, and then they don't appear to have been part of anything else. Like they were like active on OC Remix for a while, and other sort of like gaming communities. But partially because it's just very hard to search TLF and find anything fruitful, but also because like on the fan work dedication is such that like TLF's Newgrounds page just links to nuclearpower.com. Right?
Yeah.
So I think they very much wanted to be just like the conduit for getting this out to more people. Which is
and it definitely did that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Like I know that I know that every time like a new one of these was posted, I would be like, oh yeah, I need to go and catch up with 8-Bit Theater, and then I go back and like catch up to wherever it was at the time, because these tunes came out like over the course of 3 years, like the last one was 2005.
Wow.
In lieu of some Flash R, we do have a final crop of comments taken from a wide range of things. Alex, let's start with you here.
Sure. So, Kuro Boo 8U, April 27th, 2018, 4.5 out of 5. Wow. When I was a young teenager, I had the audacity to record these on my little Sony Handycam on tape, so I would watch these relentlessly.
Wow.
I was so interested in watching these over and over again on my tape, and I would comment aloud to no one, be that little lonely kid, when I would enjoy it for myself and myself only, too much that I destroyed the VCR. Goddamn, this episode was the funniest by far for me because I would crack up to the mage murdering the people and blood trails would follow. Had no idea the black mage would be so ruthless, frowny face, but I still loved this shit, smiley face.
Also, yeah. That actually calls to mind, I think earlier I was really dogging on the Looking for Group guys. Which probably sounds more bitter than I actually am. But what I find interesting between the characters, because Richard and Black Mage are basically very extremely similar. Let's not pretend otherwise. Yeah. But what I always found, I guess my criticism really of the Richard character is that he's not in the wrong. The text believes that Richard is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whereas Black Mage is constantly... If he's ever experiences any joy, he's immediately punished.
That tracks.
Because he is awful. He is always wrong, and I think that's sort of the.
And also canonically, he smells bad.
Right, yeah. And he smells terrible at every opportunity to bring it up, even if it makes no sense. It gets mentioned that he just smells bad.
Yeah,
you nobody likes him. Like even Fighter, like his best friend in the whole world. There's so many jokes or gags where Black Mage says something and everybody ignores him, even Fighter. Like, it's just because nobody cares. Because he's just useless. Everybody hates him, even his friend. And I suppose that's sort of my... If I'm bitter about anything about Looking for Group, it's that Richard, it gets to be this smug sort of author insert in a way. And I just think that's... I hesitate to say gross, but it just isn't funny to me.
That's fair. Yeah, Richard's... Richard definitely, in the same way as Rain from Least I Could Do, is
right. We're supposed to root for this guy. This guy's the hero.
Is like as author insert cool guy as possible.
Right.
Which I mean, like, was definitely the style at the time. Like, there were so many webcomics where like the writer or the author or the artist was just part of it.
Exactly.
And sometimes it really worked.
What really annoyed me is that was the common misconception that Black Mage was my author insert.
Oh.
It was always Fighter.
I was going to say, It was always Fighter.
Because Fighter was the only character I never had to think of his next line. It would just pop in there. It was just my first natural reaction is just whatever I wrote down, and that was Fighter's line or his action or whatever. For everyone else, I had to think of, okay, so what would they do then?
See, that's interesting because I remember when we covered the previous episodes... talking about like my history with Nuclear Power, the website, and like me as a tween and then teen who had never experienced D&D, religiously reading the Twinking Out with Red Mage column.
Oh gosh,
right?
Yeah.
And so inadvertently, like I learned what a lot of role playing stuff was like second or third hand through a comedy column on a webcomic website, So that I think sort of subconsciously like made me assume that like Red Mage was would have been your mouthpiece, although
That makes sense. Yeah. But my buddy Ryan Sosa wrote those advice columns.
No way.
Yep.
Today I learned. Wow.
There you go.
Yep.
Ah, Ryan Sosa does some great stuff. Dang. Wow. Cool. Okay. I mind fucking holy nuts. Like, you know when you believe something for like 18 years?
And then you're proven wrong. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like when you discover that like, you know, like pineapples grow like pineapples do, as opposed to just like hanging from a coconut tree. I don't know. Yeah, that's wild. Anyway, Brian, I do have a negative review for you to read, if you'd like.
Oh, shit. Big Badron. June 26, 2003. 1 out of 5. Oh, man. I don't get it. How is this as popular as it is? 1. The humor is lame. 2. The story is weak. The whole thing was just blah. The cloud thing was good. He moved so smoothly. Do more stuff like that. And the cameos by the cheat and strong bad were just plain wrong. Just cut out JPEGs and bad impersonations.
Those were the fucking voice actors.
Yeah, that was just... Yeah.
Those were voice clips.
Okay.
Yeah. Obviously, there was just... Jesus. Yeah. There's more. Why is the file so big? It's only like 5 minutes. 5 minutes is 5 megs? That's bad. I made a movie that is 10 minutes long, and it's only 2.5 megs, and it has full audio and whatnot. And this donation thing, that is very, very wrong. Oh shit.
Uh-oh.
Selling copyrighted material is so illegal. And I can get all the graphics you use in the movie for free. And I get them straight from your movie. And it doesn't involve print screen and JPEGs like you use for the Homestar Runner characters. I'm sorry, but this doesn't deserve to be as high as it is. Damn.
I mean, that's one thing you told me. That's one thing you can say about Newgrounds comments is they don't pull their punches very much.
Yeah,
they do not.
So that actually was one thing I was curious about, is that one thing that does show up on this episode is there is a donate button, presumably to fund the project, which at the time like would have just been like a PayPal plugin or something that would have like,
I assume.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what.
What does it link to now, or does it link to nothing?
Oh, it doesn't link to anything. Oh, I had to go through the whole preloader again. The preloader is very good though. It's
very cute.
Yeah, the intro of Mario 3, but with Black Mage and Fighter. It's very good because Black Mage gets all the power ups, and then Thief is there, and he's talking you through the menu like an old school DVD menu thing.
Yeah, very clever.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So if you hit the donate button, it goes to a specific PayPal link, which is now very, very dead.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was through the PayPal web apps thing. So, and like there were a few around this time. There were a few Flash series that were allowing people to donate to the projects and that kind of thing. I was just curious.
Well, I definitely remember at this time it was almost controversial to suggest that you should get paid for creating content.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was wondering if you at the time would have had any thoughts on that. Like, did you see any dollars coming from the 8-bit theater adaptations?
I don't think so. I mean, this was 20 years ago, so I don't really remember specifically, but I don't think so. I think I would have felt weird about taking money for the project that they did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, it's based on my script. Like, I had already written it, you know, like, whatever.
Yeah, it is weird, though, like, the idea of, like, selling out still being a thing back then.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, Alex and I have talked about this at length, especially just IRL, like, you know, when talking about, like, you know, music and other creativity and so on, like, and, like, how the idea of selling out kind of just got eroded to, no, you need to survive, just, like, plug.
Just make money off the stuff.
How dare you exist in a capitalist exploitative system?
I know, right? you know who else exists in a capitalist exploitative system? Mr. McSinister, who left this comment June of 2003. Uh-oh. 2.5 stars out of 5, in all caps, I hate 8-bit! I hate 8-bit, but I like this. The person who made this did a good job of fixing this 8-bit pile of crap by funny dialogue. People who make 8-bit games and movies should hang themselves with their NES power cord.
Wow. Jesus.
I think he's really confused about a few things.
Mr. McSinister is having a real one.
So he wants Nintendo of the time to, like, stop, but but not if but only if it's got like not if it's got funny dialogue though, then it can stay. Is that
right?
That actually reminds me, in my webcomic career, I got maybe 5 pieces of hate mail.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Which I believe is unaccountably low for a webcomic that went on for 10 years, especially for back then.
That's pretty good innings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. And I wrote back to all of them.
Oh, nice.
Just like, oh, you know, essentially, I forget exactly what I said, but the idea of being like, hey, you know, let's talk about what's really going on. You know, what are we acting mad about? Two of them never replied. The other three, eventually, after, you know, one or two back and forths, always, it would always come down to, oh, man, I was just having a bad day.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I like that. I
think Mr. McSinister is having a similar moment.
I like the idea of, like, writing to someone whose work you detest, and they just turn around and go, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, like, what's really bothering you? Because, like, you can't...
What's really going on here? Let's get to the bottom of it.
Because what... I mean, think about the time and energy you have to put into, you know, forming an email to contact somebody for doing something free, but you hate it. Like, that's just... There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, there is. And speaking of a lot going on, Brian, I would like you to take the last one, because this is our old pal.
Oh, no.
The venom to our Spider-Men. This is Erocho, who, for those who don't know, has been on a multi-year quest to leave a review on every single upload on Newgrounds.
Amazing.
And this is one that they left back in 2015, if you would like to take it.
All right. 4 out of 5. Well, that's off to a good start. It's nice to have an episode that fleshes out the characters so well. This may be a word-for-word adaptation. It's great to learn about these guys who are so popular. It's easily the most popular webcomic adaptation I've seen here. It was great to have cameos from all those video game characters. Clouds was the best, of course. I love how you got Legendary Frog and Cybermoon Studios for this. Those are two of my favorite people here. The sprite work holds up well. Then again, I guess it hasn't changed much in these years. I love the Homestar Runner cameos as well. Well, that was nice.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, sprite animations, I mean, the sprite animations, they generally don't evolve because you use the same pool.
You use the sprites.
The same pool of resources for the rest of forever.
Yeah, so that is that was Erocho's contribution. And yeah, it's... I don't know. Like, I think now, there's a theme with our Erocho comments. In that they're...
Yeah, I was about to ask, if he's doing this huge project, like, are they always generally positive? Does he ever go into a McSinister rant?
He's never, like, gone on, like, a Sinister... He's, like, said some strange things.
He seems like a strange fellow, I have to say.
But, like, generally, he's fairly positive.
When there is criticism, there is some constructive criticism, which is nice.
Criticism is usually constructive. There's been a couple of times where he's been a little bit, you know, horny on Maine, shall we say.
A little bit, yeah. Even in the previous episode, actually.
Yeah.
Because Rouge the Bat showed up in a Sonic
and
animation.
And he had to have an opinion about that.
Oh boy.
Homina homina, awooga, hello nurse.
Wow.
So that is going to do it for our cartoons for today.
I just looked up the bat. Wow.
Oh, Rouge the Bat. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Rouge the Bat. She is. She's the one with the tits.
She's the furry bait.
They're all furry.
They're all furry bait, but she's the most.
Rouge is the furry bait.
Baitiest.
Yeah, the baitiest. There you go. So. That's going to bring us to our emails. And on our previous episode, previous but one episode, we asked folks to email in to flashinthepancast@gmail.com and tell us about their webcomic memories. Ha ha, you didn't know we'd be having an actual webcomic person on, did you? Ha ha ha. That's how we do it.
That's how we get you.
Planning ahead.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with this email from Great Joe, our frenemy Great Joe, longtime Flashketeer. Hello, Joe. Quote, hi there, webcomic. It really is too bad you didn't ask about paper comics. Or I'd go off about the Don Rosa Duck comics, Asterix, Tintin, Lucky Luke, and so on. I grew up on those, and it wasn't until I was in my teens that I found the truest form of sequential art. That being the Sprite comic. I'd sometimes look up new ones, though considering I regularly read Bob and George, I can't really say I had much taste. Hey, Bob and George sure was a webcomic.
Sure,
it was very important
sure
to me. I do have to raise awareness of a comic that I think might be completely scrubbed off the internet, as well as the Wayback Machine. It's completely vanished. It was called Dave's Adventures. And from what I could tell, 99% of the work was put into SGI-rendered backgrounds with that late 90s foggy look to them, over which there were superimposed floating planks in midair. The very cool but also very lazy, because that was the style at the time, Dave had a laser sword, and you could tell because it left translucent trails. And back in those days, you pretty much had to get Photoshop to pull off that effect. There was dialogue that I'd forgotten, a lot of going from left to right, and a lot of strips were just three panels of these laser sword trails leading to whichever Dave sprite, and a line about getting closer. This is when I discovered that, yes, something can indeed be too boring to read, even if there are lasers happening. I do hope Dave found better uses for his SGI workstation and Photoshop license. Your friend, great Joe.
I mean, he did.
That brings up so many very vague memories for me, because there were so...
The title actually sounds familiar.
Maybe you've met Dave in a previous life.
Could be.
And been on adventures. How is your laser sword? How are the trails on that?
Oh, pretty weak.
You gotta charge that crystal back up. because I remember, like, especially around I'd say by about 2005, like, especially Sprite Comic had its own attached forum and fan base, and for a lot of them there was a space for people to post their own comics. I remember Bob and George in particular had so many other Sprite comics linked off the main site.
Mm.
And some of them were, like, really ambitious, and some of them were, like, just little gag-a-day things. But, like, yeah, like, there were so many that could have been Dave's Adventures, from what I recall.
It does sound familiar.
It sounds so familiar, yeah, doesn't it? Yeah. Go for Brian, if you'd like to take this one from... This is from someone who has signed their post GamerDude TM.
Wow, nice.
And the email subject is, "Oh God, not the webcomics."
Oh boy. For better or worse, I was born just old enough to catch the tail end of old school webcomics before most switched from desktop to mobile first sites like Tapas and Webtoon. However, the landscape was already more solidified, so there were already charts and wiki entries, and none of the big webcomics appealed to me at all. So the webcomics were another thing that I mindlessly followed a 4chan hobby board for when it came to the tastes and preferences.
Uh-oh.
Ergo, I would binge... that's a warning. That's a red flag. Ergo, I would binge the archives of dozens of comics like Zebra Girl and End Town. Box Dog was my scratchy, near monochromatic comic about depression, plus anything Megmog and Owl and Pictures for Sad Children.
Oh, yes.
Wish I had more to say about Prequel.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, but what was Prequel?
So Prequel actually came up on a recent episode of Homestuck Made This World, which is an extremely good podcast I've plugged before.
Right.
So Prequel was, similar to Homestuck, a kind of like an adventure comic. It was about a cat girl from The Elder Scrolls. I don't play those games. But it was
They are called Khajiit.
Okay, but it was like a prequel to Oblivion, and it was like her going on her own adventure based on prompts from the audience. And I remember it was very big for a time.
Was this hand drawn?
It was. I think it was made in Flash. It was very Homestucky, though obviously written differently.
So there's a funny Homestuck connection to 8-bit theater.
Oh really?
Oh yeah.
I think Andrew was inspired to do comics from 8-Bit Theater.
Whoa.
I remember somebody had mentioned that, like, or like the to be more meta video gamey. I think maybe that was it. Like, that was the sort of in for Homestuck taking off.
That's interesting.
I don't know.
Well, I know that the very first MS Paint Adventures thing was Bard Quest, which was a lot more sort of fantasy jokey.
Mm.
So I don't know. Yeah, there maybe there is a connection there. That would be neat. I mean, like, I can at the very least like see some kind of connective tissue, partially because 8-Bit Theater was like one of the big webcomics in the early days.
Yeah, I like to brag. It was the third most read webcomic back when there were like five. Like, it was not gonna. It had to be somebody. Like, I'm just the guy who tripped into it.
So it was like you, Penny Arcade, and what, like
PvP.
Oh yeah, yeah, Sluggy Freelance.
I'm sure that, yeah, that had to be up there as well.
Yeah. User friendly? Gosh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow. But going back in the day. Anyway, yes, please continue.
Yeah. Just had a giggling fit remembering how long BoneQuest/Jerk City comics were being spammed in humor threads for literal years, and the equally large outrage that came from Anon's not being able to share Death Grips memes without some crusty four panel of characters talking about absolute nonsense above and below the funny edit of an MC ride.
Excellent. Good.
Anyways, love the podcast a good bit. Been listening for several months. I would suggest checking out, etc., etc.
Okay. So thank you very much, Gamer Dude.
Excellent.
Alex, if you'd like to say this one from Arp.
So I read a bunch of webcomics in middle and high school and even into early college, which I will now list and describe the less infamous ones and put spaces between, so it is more legible. I promise this isn't as long as it looks.
Okay.
XKCD, questionable content slice of life comic. It used to be about a guy named Martin and his love life, but now about like equal rights for AI and trans rights and all sorts of cool shit. Cyanide and happiness, least I could do, like early QC, but terrible. He also did a fantasy webcomic, which is more terrible because his Playboy OC wasn't in it.
I promise I did not plan that.
Penny Arcade, Order of the Stick. I remember Order of the Stick.
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
No, Order of the Stick, like, I remember having seen, like, print editions sold in, like, indie tabletop shops and so on.
Yeah.
Like, Order of the Stick I believe still has, like, a really big following.
Probably. Like, I mean, fucking looking
Grognard's
for
Grognard's old and young. Mostly old.
If looking for a group is still going, I'm not surprised at this point. Yeah. Order of the Stick, about a group of adventurers who live in a world governed by D&D 3.5 rules. Oh, I'm sorry. And it is all done in a very simple style and is legit one of the best stories you can find these days. It is so good. White Ninja, 8-Bit Theater, Psy, Dominic Deegan, and Sinfest.
Oof.
I dabbled in a few other comics, but these were the big ones. As you may be able to guess, I did not have many friends who were within easy hangout range when I was young, whatever I am.
So, two things I want to jump on. First of all, previous podcast guest, Bittercarella, a little while ago did a full live tweet thread of reading through the entire archives of Sinfest.
Yes.
Which
yes,
is
they did,
genuinely
yes.
fascinating and then confusing
terrifying.
And
terrifying. Then exhausting. Yeah. And terrifying, yeah. Because you can see you can see the downward spiral happening in real time, and it's wild.
Yeah.
But also, White Ninja. I loved White Ninja so much. It was this, I don't know if either of you remember it, but so it was this absurdist, like, really like, kind of like deliberately scruffily drawn comic about a white ninja guy, like a guy in a white ninja suit who would just like have these inane non-adventures and so on, but like it was so gripping for some reason. And I still have somewhere a piece of merch that I got way 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 back in the day, which was official White Ninja merch, but it was, like, this beautiful illustration of, like, animal heads, like, jumping out of each other's mouths that you would never, ever connect with White Ninja. It was just a really cool image. But, you know, White Ninja rules, and I really hope that somehow it sees a resurgence, because yeah. I would love to see some deep dives into whatever the heck was going on there.
That would be interesting, for sure.
Right, so I'm going to finish off with this one from Patrick. Patrick says, "Hello, I saw you asking about webcomics I used to read and wanted to share. As someone who has read and continues to read a lot of them, real quick, ones I've read that lots of people will have heard of: VG Cats, of course, Penny yeah. Arcade, XKCD, 8-Bit Theater, Take a Shot, Cyanide and Happiness. Now the good stuff," he says. "Brawl in the Family."
Oh yeah, Brawl in the Family.
Which
good.
Was very, very good. Yeah. What if the Smash characters got into antics? Mostly Gag-A-Day type stuff, but with a few short storylines and a lot of musical specials, which did have a proper finale, which mm-hmm. is nice. Mm-hmm. Awkward Zombie, which is still very good, which yep, is yep, like yep. one of the best long-running video game joke comics by Katie Tiedrich, I believe, who I first encountered like way, way, way back on DeviantArt. Because a picture came, and this is, I forget if I've ever mentioned this before, but the reason that I know who Katie Diedrich was in the first place is because on my DeviantArt feed, a picture came up of, so it's the Wicked Witch of the West, and she's pouring a big pot of molten iron, and she's going, "I'm smelting!"
Wow.
And I thought, you know what? Lady, you have a fan for life.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to discover someone's work.
Yeah, so Patrick continues. Captain Snez, what if Captain N said fuck? Very long, very complicated plot about video game crossovers. Technically still going, Jesus. With infrequent updates. Order of the Stick, Pokemon X and Nuzlocke comics.
Yes.
Questionable content. Homestuck, quote, "Homestuck is good and I will die on this hill." Waterworks, which was one of the big MSPA fan adventures when the forum was still around. It's still going, but the author is pretty burnt out, so progress is slow. And finally, their webcomic hot take. Modern Control-Alt-Delete is pretty good. Patrick no. says, "I read all of original CAD. I joined a bit after Loss, but had caught up and was an active reader by the time CAD 1.0 ended with Ethan's death. I like to joke about it, but original CAD had some decent moments and I enjoyed it at the time. I think modern CAD, since the reboot, is actually really good for the most part. I really enjoy the rebooted versions of Ethan and Company and Analog and D-Pad, and while a lot of the other stuff can be pretty hit or miss, because the update schedule is so consistent, it's one of the ones I keep up with the most." So that's interesting. I have not heard much about CAD in a while.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I've come across people talking like positively post reboot about Control Alt Delete and like sharing a couple of bits here and there, and like every time I've been like, "This Control Alt Delete for real?" Like,
if so, then like I am really glad that it has found a new lease of life, because. Yeah. Goodness knows it has a history.
Yeah, is it? I mean, you just mentioned Loss.
Yeah, I didn't. Patrick did. Yeah,
well,
yes.
I mean, is that not the first time we've mentioned Loss on the show? Is
this
it?
Can't be the first time we talked about Loss on the show. Although it is an audio medium, and Loss is an entirely visual experience.
Well, I mean, you could. You could technically no, I'd still end up. I was going to say, you could make noises in sequence that would end up looking a little bit like Loss, but that would still convert to a visual format. So.
Sound of hospital doors opening. Sound of hurried conversation with doctor. Yeah, no, yeah. It doesn't really, not really the same.
No.
So that is. Oh dear. So that is going to. Bring us to the end of our emails and the end of our episode for next time. So in honor of the sadly aborted Looking For Group movie, are there any pieces of lost media that you have a particular interest in or fondness for? You know, what about that trailer for that game that never came out? That piece of vaporware that disappeared into a puff of smoke? Have you somehow subscribed to Star Citizen? You know, like any of the above. We'll be interested in hearing your lost media experiences or desires. And as always, you can send those to, as well as, you know, questions, comments, hate mail. Maybe we can catch up with Brian in the amount of hate mail we've got.
Hey,
We haven't had any, I don't think.
Oh, I'll make sure you get one.
Oh, thanks. Thank that you. Means a lot. That really means a lot. You can send all of that to flashinthepancast@gmail.com. So that leaves us with the final sign-off. Brian, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it really has been.
No, thanks for having me.
Of course. And this is your time to plug away. What are you doing? Where can people find it? Where can people find you?
Ooh. Golly. So, mostly these days I work on a comic called Atomic Robo.
Atomic Robo!
There's online...
It's good.
Yeah, and there's an online version for free, or you can buy the books. Just go to atomic-robo.com and you can read it all. Or check out our online store for merchandising. Also wrote a novel recently, Sci-Fi Crimes in the Capitalist Hellscape around Jupiter. It's called Bad Moons Rising. You can get that at all kinds of ebook stores. There's only ebook versions currently. What else am I doing? I don't know. That's the big stuff. Oh, Skeleton King. That's our other. It's our fantasy comic. It's about more fantasy guys being jerks and doing scams.
What a concept!
I know it's brand new ground to me. I'm writing it with Lee Black, and our artist is Escher Cattle. We're having a lot of fun with that. I guess that's the big things.
Nice. And if people want to find you on the socials, are you a Twitter person or are you just a ghost?
I'm on the Twitter at bclevenger. No, wait, not doc anything. Just bclevenger.
At bclevenger.
Okay, yeah. Awesome. Alex, what about you?
You can find me online. I am on Twitter. I feel like I say this every single episode. I'm really trying to reduce the amount of time I spend on there, and it is working to a degree, but you can find me on Twitter. I've made a couple of what I consider to be funny tweets recently. You can find me on Twitter.
You've evoked some chuckles.
I know. You can find me on Twitter at DEX01. That is the online handle I will keep until I die.
Wow.
Other than that, though, you can find absolutely everything I've done music-wise and otherwise. If you go to alexvalentine.card.co, you can find my music, you can find some videos of me performing music and performing with my band, and my YouTube Let's Play stuff. And, it's all there.
Yeah, speaking of music, by the way, check out our previous live episode if you would like hear Alex and I performing the theme song to an audience of baffled weirdos at a convention.
It was so good. The expressions of people's faces when the guitar came out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was... you can audibly hear like a titter like run through the audience. It's really good.
Yeah, as for me, as always, for my sins, I am on Twitter at Gertrude Perkins. That's Gertrude PRKNS. I am also part of Flash in the Pan, which is this podcast,
that
which
is
you can
podcast.
Also find on Twitter. Yeah, it's at Flash IT Pancast or Flash It Pancast. Our website, as always, flashinthepancast.com, where you can find all of the cartoons we've talked about, all of our previous episodes, a master list of everything we've ever covered, so you can get those suggestions in knowing that they will be fresh as a daisy. If you would like to support us, then please tell your friends, tell your family, tell your folks, tell your worst enemy, and hey, maybe you'll make up. But please, it does help. Word of mouth is the best way to spread podcast joy, and goodness knows we need some joy, if not podcasts, in this world at the moment. Mm-hmm. So please do that. If you would like to be even more generous and support us with actual human money, then you can do so at patreon.com/flashinthepan, where you can donate to get early episodes, like a week early, which is nice, or even at a slightly higher tier to join our lovely Flash in the Pan Discord community, where recently we've been arguing about Homestuck.
Yes, so I did see that. I like quickly like scrolled through it and I was like, I am not getting involved.
It's great. We've had some fandom secrets posting. It's been a delight.
Fantastic.
Thank you, as always, to our gracious web host, Alicia E. Goranson. You can find her writing and recording at alicia-goranson.com. That's basically everything, I believe. This has been an absolutely lovely time. I am going to go and listen to Slaughter Your World again and not apologize for it because it's catchy as hell. So until next time, I have been Tom.
I have been Alex.
I'm still Brian.
And oh, my brittle old man hip!
Have a great flash.